I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
What's up, Pitt fans? Welcome back to another Pitt Mailbag here on the Post Gazette Sports Now YouTube channel and podcast network. He is Chris Carter. I'm Noah Hiles. Carter, we have a lot of wins to recap or discuss, so I guess. When you think about it, Pitt football wins Thursday.
Cha-ching.
Pitt women's soccer wins Friday and Sunday? Or did Cha-ching. They win? No, they won Thursday.
I think it was Friday and Sunday.
I don't know. They're in the Elite Eight. Volleyball with a big win Saturday, wrestling with a win over Lehigh this weekend as well, and Pitt basketball is 4-0 now, heading to Brooklyn for the preseason NIT. Plenty of great Pitt things to talk about, and we've got some questions on a couple of different teams here, but before we get into all of that, we've got to talk about the show's presenting sponsor, which is Mike's Beer Bar. Whether if you're in town for a Steelers, Pirates, or Pitt game, Mike's Beer Bar is right across the street from PNC Park and has the best selection of beer in town, as well as amazing food options. They have over 20 TVs, and you can catch all of your NFL, college football, Pirates, Penguins, Riverhounds, and Premier League action right at Mike's. Ms. Carter acts out all of those sports as I read them off. Come in and try one of their 500 different available beers, 300 of them being local beers, as well as their 80 different local craft beers available on tap. You can also get a flight to try out every option you can dream of. And trust me, you won't run out of favorites because I never do, and I'm always there. Try their steak on a stone for an awesome meal where you choose how hot you want your steak cooked with a heated stone right in front of you as you enjoy a night out in Pittsburgh. Come to Mike's Beer Bar and get your sports fix and experience the best bar in Pittsburgh. Carter, you know what? I'll let you start. We talking football or basketball first?
Let's go football.
Yeah, okay. What a surprise. You picked football first. All right. This question comes from not me, a different Noah. Does Dino Babers realistically have a future with the Pitt football program? I'm going to start off on this one, Carter, because I did a little digging.
Okay.
Dino Babers did coach at Pitt. 2003, he was the Panthers running back coach. And when you consider that this guy does have an offensive background, I mean, he's been an OC, a wide receiver coach, quarterbacks coach, running backs coach. There is a little bit of a paper trail, and Pat Narduzzi has nothing but great things to say about this guy.
They friends.
But at the end of the day, I just think it would probably be too much of a contract, no? I mean, you go from a head coaching deal at a Power 5 school where you're making multiple millions of dollars. I don't have his deal right in front of me, but you would assume it's at least $2 to $3 million, right? I'll probably look up that figure when you give your answer here, Carter. But in the meantime, it just seems like it would be weird for him to go from Syracuse's head coach to a Pitt OC job in the same conference. Sure, that's definitely a beneficial thing for Pitt. I'm not sure it would be worth Dino's time to go just over $4 million. Yeah, so Pitt's not going to be able to pay him even half of that to be the OC. I mean, it might be able to, but it wouldn't be fiscally responsible for the program, really. I mean, if they want to pay an assistant coach $2 million, go for it. But I think if you're going to spend $2 million on an OC, you could probably get something better than Dino Babers as well. So, yeah, if Dino Babers wants to come here and call plays for $1 million or less, I think Pitt should definitely hear it out. I don't think he's going to be interested in doing that. I think the guy probably wants to be a head coach. Or if he's going to be an OC, he's going to do it at a program that can pay him a lot more money than Pitt can. That would be my guess. Carter, you have any other thoughts?
My other thing here is the guy's 62. He's been around a while. And yes, him and Pat are friends. Like chemistry-wise, him and Pat, I think, would be very interesting. Dino would be fun to talk to. Like, I'd love to cover Dino Babers being the OC at Pitt. But I think that this offense needs a younger mind, a fresher mind, that is going to open up the Pitt offense more to the passing game and kind of get them to step out of where they've been for most of Narduzzi's tenure and get them tenure and to get them most into more into what they started to do under Mark Whipple when Kenny Pickett started clicking. And that's kind of get open looks, get simple reads for your quarterback, get the ball out quickly to talented wide receivers and win that way. And then balance that with a rushing attack from there. I think that can be a path forward. I'm just not so sure that Dino Babers is the guy that is going to usher in that kind of an offense.
So on that note, Carter, we'll go to our second question from Zach. This is assuming, again, that Frank Cignetti Jr. is not retained as Pitt's offensive coordinator and Pitt needs a new one heading into the offseason. And if that does indeed happen, Zach wants to know who our early Pitt OC candidate list is and who's on it. Carter, do you have any names off the top of your head?
This is one that's less of a realistic one and more that like I think that they should do, but they should absolutely see if they could try to mend fences and bring back Brennan Marion, because Brennan Marion's at UNLV. I covered him here when he was the wide receivers coach, and that guy brought this team together in a lot of ways. There were so many things that everyone was excited about in Pitt's offense, but when he was leaving, Charlie Partridge was trying to get him to not leave, because Charlie Partridge saw what he did for the offense. In 1 year's time, Brennan Marion got Pitt's receivers to go from having the most drops in college football to being, you know, having a Biletnikoff winner and across the board being one of the more consistent units in college football. And that right there to me was a sign that, like, you know, that guy's special. He wanted the OC job. Pitt didn't give it to him. They basically told him he's going to have to wait. He didn't want to wait, so he went to Texas, where he basically took the same job, receivers coach and passing coordinator. And then all of a sudden, their new receivers coach, Tyquan Underwood, became the passing coordinator along with the receivers coach, which was an interesting, I thought, response to Brennan's situation. I don't think it'll ever happen, but if I had a short list, he'd be at the top of it. I think that he's doing amazing things at UNLV, and that if they brought him back, he could do a lot of really good things with this offense.
Here's the thing, Carter. Brennan Marion ain't going to be anyone's offensive coordinator next year. That guy's going to be a head coach, I think. Yeah, I just think that he's clearly established himself as one of the better young offensive minds in college football. Just look at the accolades that he's been connected to this offseason, or this season, the attention that he's gained, and I get that it's going to be part of our algorithm because he's connected forever to a program that we cover. I think that Marion's going to be a head coach. And if he does take an OC job, it's going to be in a similar spot, like we said with Babers, where he's going to go to a place that's going to pay him a lot of money, a lot more than Pitt probably would want to pay. So, and again, mending fences on top of that asking price is not going to work out well. I have three guys that I have my name on, or my eye on. The first is Andrew Janako, something. Okay. I've never said his name out loud, so I apologize. I've only read it. He's a Pitt alum and the quarterback coach for the Chicago Bears. That just seems to me like a logical connection. Pitt people love Pitt people, right? And being in the NFL, young mind, like you said, there's a lot of dots to be connected there. Number two on my list, just from hearing stuff on social media, this hasn't been told to me by any sources or anything. But another obvious candidate looks to be Mike Shanahan, former Pitt wide receiver, JMU offensive coordinator. Obviously, the Dukes having a great season. They lost in overtime this past weekend, but still, really good season. He and his former teammate at Pitt, Tino Cinceri, cooking up some good things with that Dukes offense. Now, I do think it needs to be mentioned, though, that the guy's currently working for Kurt Cignetti. So will it be weird hiring the OC from a staff that's coached by the brother of your current OC who's about to get canned? I don't know what that dynamic would be like and if that would create any other problems. Now, if we're going to go away from the whole hiring a Pittman playbook, which might do in, I don't know if how many of Narduzzi's OCs have had Pitt ties, aside from Cignetti. I'd have to go back and look, but I'd have to imagine at least one of them wasn't like a Pitt man beforehand. So If you're gonna go outside the box and you could pick anyone, I'm going with Willie Korn. He's the offensive coordinator at Liberty. Here are things why you should be invested. Here's why you should be invested in Willie Korn.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
He's just 1 year into the job. So while his body of work isn't going to be as great as everyone else's, he's affordable. You can go get him. And in a place like Pitt might be a logical step upward. You look at where Liberty ranks offensively right now. Number 8 scoring offense in the country. You know what's even better to Pat Narduzzi than number 8 scoring offense in the country? Number 1 rushing offense in the country. And this isn't an Army-Navy Veer triple option type thing. They're running out of the gun. It's a similar system to what Malik Willis ran a couple of years ago. And while, you know, that's not the best name to boast as far as pro quarterback status is concerned, it was a highly productive college quarterback. And you look at Liberty's starting quarterback right now, he's got 2,400 passing yards or somewhere in that ballpark. You have that type of offensive production, plus the number one rushing offense in the country. I believe the Flames are now 10-0, 11-0. So there's a lot to like there. And again, I think because this guy is so young and because he's only 1 year into this OC thing, you're not going to have the head coaching opportunities that you would have with a Brendan Marion, who again is still 1 year into similar spot, but a little older, a little bit more established, worked at bigger programs than this guy. So I think Willie Korn might be just someone that I discovered on my own, but if I had to pick one, I would put him in the mix.
Another one last guy for me here. It's a guy named the name of Jamarcus Shepherd.
Okay.
Receivers coach in Washington. He's worked with guys like Odunze, McMillan, Rondell Moore. He's been very good. He's worked under several different major head coaches, including Mike Leach. He's had a chance to grow. And the rumor was that had Washington's offensive coordinator left, he would have just been promoted to the position. And so if Washington with Penix and all the things they've been doing well offensively wants to, you know, is thinking about promoting this guy, if I'm Pitt and I can attract him with a decent contract to be an OC of a power five program somewhere else, instead of if he's tired of waiting around, maybe that's the move that you go. You get a guy like that who's produced several NFL talents, who's been around. And I think him and Tyquan Underwood with their receiver backgrounds could be great to help open up the passing offense more, because then the OC, he has more insight into what the receivers want and he can tie to the quarterback. Hey, this is what I need you to get into. This is what I need you to see. And this is what they're going to be doing. And you build that connection. You build up a strong passing game again. And I just really think Pitt can develop a running game on its own. I think like that they can recruit the power. If Pitt can unlock the passing game again, and the defense stays at the level that I think it can, it makes the Panthers so dangerous in the ACC right now, especially with the teams that are leaving. But, like, they would be a very real problem with the passing game. And, again, I'm not saying Jamarcus Shepherd is easily gettable, but you need a guy like that that's working with receivers, that's working in passing games, that are contributing to big numbers and knows how to talk to those type of guys and build those kind of chemistries in your passing room.
I like that suggestion. I think you said the word passing way too many times for him to be, to be a candidate. I hope I'm wrong for Pitt's sake, because I totally agree with everything you just said, Carter. They need to have a pass-first offensive coordinator come in here. That's just the way college football is played. I'm sorry. You do not want to be the Iowa of the ACC. That's just not what you should strive to be.
Nope.
Like the fact that this guy's a Mike Leach disciple, that should be an encouraging thing. But I think compared to past hires, it might not be.
No, so, listen, I get it.
Yeah. So that's where, that was our list. So that's not what we've heard. And we're going to, trust me, We're going to be doing a lot of digging into that list that's going to be put together here really soon, you'd have to assume. So keep an eye on that. We'll move over now to basketball. Lee wants to know, what player will Pitt rely upon most in its two games this week in Brooklyn? Ooh. Carter, I'll let you start with this one.
Look, I think there's – Bob Carrington has been an exciting player, and I think he's doing great. But against teams like this that are going to – they're going to try and fluster Pitt's young guards. They're going to try to get after him. I think that Blake Hinson's going to do what Blake Hinson's going to do. But one guy that can really balance everything is Ishmael Leggett.
Okay.
Because I think that – and I think Blake would be a great answer. I think Bub would be a great answer. But the reason I say Ishmael Leggett is because I can – you can see there were times when – who did Pitt last play? Binghamton?
No, they last played Jacksonville.
Jacksonville. Thank you. I'm mixing up all the random schools that didn't play. Yeah. But Jacksonville, you could see them start to double team him, and Bub was kind of feeling it a little bit. Not too much. I thought he handled it well. But I just think some of these veteran teams that are that they're going to go up against in this NIT tournament, they're going to try and force the pressure on the younger guards, and that's where Leggett's going to have to come in and calm things down, help keep the offense flowing. And who knows? Maybe Bob Carrington's going to shrug it off and be like, man, y'all ain't got nothing for me. And then he's cooking. But I think that there's times in college basketball when you need veteran guard play to come through for you in tight moments. If there are tight moments in these games, which if they're playing well, I think I expect them to be tight. I'd like to see Ishmael Leggett kind of balance things out and kind of make some of the smarter plays that they can rely upon. Who's your guy?
Well, just looking at it, I think one thing that people don't really recognize with Leggett right now is, as far as his contributions go, is rebounding. I think his perimeter defense and his rebounding makes his team so much better. I wouldn't say so much better than it was last year. I think it's way too early to say that, so let me rephrase. I think it makes Pitt's ceiling this year so much higher than what its ceiling was last year. The potential's there just because of what he does. And you look at what some of these teams do. I mean, Florida is tied for third in offensive rebounding in the country. So they're going to need that rebounding help. And it's 16 in the country in rebounding margin. Baylor is always a team that's going to play quick tempo. Helps to have a veteran guard when it's going to be a run and gun type game. And Oregon State's best guard is averaging 20.5 points a game. So guard play matters, but on the biggest stage, and we're only four games into the season, but these are the two biggest games of the year as they set the tone for a very important stretch. And in games like this, you need your best player to step up. And the best player on this team is Blake Hinson. Like I said, the rebounding stats, Blake's been good this year. I'm not saying that he hasn't. I'm not saying like Blake's got to step up in the sense where it's like he hasn't played well. It's just, these are the games where you rely on your best player when it's your first ever game against a Power 5 opponent for your new backcourt. You know who's not new. You know who's played in Brooklyn. You know who's played in the tournament. You know who's played in these situations before in the same uniform with the same head coach. It's number two. That's the guy. And you just look at some of the matchups he's going to see on the wing. I mean, Wednesday night, he's going to probably be responsible for guarding Tyrese Samuel, who's fourth in the SEC with 8.5 rebounds a game, a 12-point scorer. Riley Kugel, another wing for Florida State, or for Florida, excuse me, 13 points a game, 1.1 steals a game, which is number five in the SEC. You move it over to Baylor. Let's assume that they beat Florida State. Baylor has Jacoby Walter on the wing. Guy's a McDonald's All-American, averaging 18 points a game. That's a defensive assignment that I want to see Blake Hinson take on. If you're going to be in the NBA, you're going to see a lot of Jacoby Walters around. Yep. That's got to be how he makes his money. And then on the other end, if they lose to Florida and end up playing Oregon State, because there's just no way Oregon State's beating Baylor, Tyler Bidlow, I believe is how you say his name, 15, 8.8, and 1.5 are his slash line, I guess you could say, his averages at the four for Oregon State. That's another dangerous guy. So Blake's going to see, I mean, I think the easy storyline is it's going to be Bub's first matchup against legit guards. There's no denying that. But he has Ishmael Leggett helping. And while Blake has Zach Austin to help him out on the wing, and down low, Blake shouldn't need help. Blake, if Blake's one of the best players in the ACC, really? This is where he shows it. This is where, this week, is where I want to see Blake Henson show the country how different his game is compared to last year. And he has a great opportunity to do so.
Listen, he's the biggest player on the team. I feel you. If he goes out there and he does it, he can be the difference maker. I just wanted to give an alternative answer because
no,
I feel like yeah. in every game we can always say Blake Henson's got to be the man. And you know what? On Friday when we last covered him, he was looking like the dude.
I mean, all three of the names that we just talked about have had pretty good years so far.
Very good point. Very good point.
All right. Drew wants to know, are you either of you surprised that Pitt basketball hasn't received any sort of attention in the first 2 weeks of this year's AP poll? I'm starting. No, I'm not surprised. Dude, they've beat four mid-major schools that are not going to sniff the NCAA tournament. I mean, maybe Florida Gulf Coast will, but Jacksonville's not a good team. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. They have decent rebounding numbers, but just watch them. Did you think that was a good team, Chris?
No.
And neither was North Carolina A&T. Now, if it was a battle of the bands, I'd take North Carolina A&T. But that's no offense to Pitt, but that's just me speaking facts. But if we're talking basketball, yeah, that's not a good team. Pitt played a Binghamton team that I think is maybe decent in its league. And Florida Gulf Coast, which I think will compete in its league. But overall, I mean, no. This is a team that was like three spots away from missing the tournament last year. Sure, it won a couple of games in the tournament. It was a good season. It was a fun story to tell. But there's no reason for Pitt to be on the cusp yet. Now, there are a lot of stats where I think that maybe it should have received like a vote or two, but like it's not a top 25 team yet. Now, however, if Pitt goes undefeated this next week, it definitely should be in the top 25. And I don't care if that includes a win over Baylor or not. If Pitt beats two Power 5 teams on a neutral floor, and one of those two is Florida, who's top 40 in KenPom, absolutely it should be in the mix for a top 25 team. We're just 2 weeks into the season, though. They got to beat someone first.
And I just continue to look at how if we remember all last year when Pitt was playing very well down the stretch and they were beating some of the top teams in the ACC and everyone was wondering where the net was, where the KenPom was, all those things. I just go back to that and I think, man, like, There were a lot of times where I'm like, Pitt has continued to prove itself, but because of some of their early season losses, that carried over. What Pitt is doing right now is they are solidifying their resume with wins and big wins with big margins that are going to say, hey, you know, you're not going to have those pitfalls. So when Pitt does stack wins later this year, and I think that they will, I'm not sure if they'll sweep the NIT tournament or go 1-1 or what they'll do, but when they start getting wins in the ACC this year, those earlier, the lack of bad losses early in the season will allow Pitt to jump up a lot faster and stay a lot faster, or stay a lot stronger in the season if they lose to a really good team. Because last year, like when they lost to Duke, they got crushed and they would drop so far in those rankings. I think that's where Pitt's at right now. Also, I mean, a lot of this is also based off of preseason rankings, right? And where people start in a lot of these things. And let's face it, Pitt, we didn't know. What Pitt would look like. We didn't know who Bub Carrington was. We didn't know who Jalen Lowe was or Ishmael Leggett would be, how good Ishmael Leggett could translate from Rhode Island to here. What you knew was Blake Henson can score and Fede Federico, when healthy, could be a problem, especially as a defensive center. But they needed a lot of other pieces to fall in place. The good thing is they are falling in place. But now they need to show it on bigger stages that they are doing those things, and then they'll get the attention. And you're right. If they beat Florida, and my goodness, if they beat Baylor, John Rothstein said himself, he tweeted after Pitt's last game, he was like, Pitt and Florida are matching up, and I really want to see what that's like. If they do that, I guarantee you all those eyes will start looking at Pitt, and they'll start sniffing the top 25.
Yeah, I totally agree. I also think it's worth noting. I mean, Pitt is already up to 39 in KenPom.
Yep.
And that's because last year, sure, if you look at the final scores, Pitt won a lot of its games against mid-majors by 20, 30 points, but they weren't winning in the ways that they're winning now. where they're up by 20 before the 10-minute mark in the first half, where their assist-to-turnover numbers are ridiculous. I tweeted out today, Pitt's top 25 in the country in like 12 different major stat categories.
Yep.
And it's doing things that cater to the KenPom algorithm. It's rebounding. It's efficient with the basketball. I think it's number 7 in the country or something like that in assist-to-turnover ratio. Or number 12, excuse me, in the country in assist-to-turnover ratio. Like, it's doing, it's checking all the right boxes this year. And you want to talk about start of the year rankings, Carter. I don't know exactly where the Panthers started on KenPom this year. I'm going to go ahead and guess it was a lot higher than where they started on KenPom at the beginning of last season when they were coming off 5 straight losing seasons. So it's in a good spot. It's in a really good spot where it just has to play well in this stretch of games, not just in Brooklyn, but after Brooklyn, the 3 games after Brooklyn against Power 5 opponents, which we'll get into to close off the show. Andrew wants to know how confident are we in Pitt's next 5 games. What's our record prediction? So for clarification, Pitt will play 2 games this week in Brooklyn. On Wednesday, it will play Florida, and it will play either Baylor or Oregon State, depending on the winner of those 2 matchups. And then it comes home the following week. So next week, it will play Missouri on Tuesday, which was a tournament team last year. And then next Sunday, it will play Clemson at home. And then the week after that, it heads over to Morgantown for a backyard brawl in West Virginia. So that's those 3 matchups that I just listed after Brooklyn. Those 2 of them are former tournament teams. Huge. And Clemson's a team that just missed the tournament last year.
Yep.
So, Carter, I'll let you go. What's Pitt's record in its next 5 games?
I say 4-1. Mm-hmm. I think that Pitt can win one of the NIT games. Missouri just lost to Jackson State at home, and it was a buzzer beater. But that's one of those losses that, like, Missouri, they're going to need to do a lot this year to make up for that. When ranking stuff and stuff get considered. But Missouri lost that game. Clemson has been a team that has given Pitt problems because of their physicality. And oftentimes Pitt has struggled when they have not had answers because of depth in the front court.
Yeah.
And I think this year they finally have some depth there. And I think that if Pitt can come in and its guard play can be solid and it can be physical, it can hang and bang with Clemson and get a win there. And I honestly think they go into Morgantown. I think they can run that. They can run those. West Virginia has stuff to clean up right now. And listen, that's nothing against those kids. That's just a big mess of a situation. You know, the players at West Virginia.
Yeah.
You know, they're just in a rough spot. If any program that gets hit with a scandal like that, is going to deal with problems. I think that Pitt's going to this, and I think Jeff is going to want to challenge it because. Correct me if I'm wrong, Noah. That's their first real road game, right?
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It's their first a contest in an away venue. Yes, like it.
I think Jeff is going to be is going to be like, all right, it's time to doggone prove it as you go in there. I think they're going to be motivated and want to win that one. And I think that they'll go 1-1 in the NIT, beat Missouri, beat Clemson, beat West Virginia. And then everyone's going to be talking about maybe Pitt is back. But don't say that if you're a Pitt fan, because every time they've said that, something bad has happened right afterwards.
Yeah. I'm tempted to say 4-1. I'm going to be safe and play. I'm going to play it safe and say 3-2. I think that it'll go 1-1 in the ACC. If it beats Florida Wednesday, then it's going to go 4-1. If it doesn't beat Florida, I think 3-2. Here's my logic. So, yeah, path 1, Pitt beats Florida. Pitt will then lose to Baylor, and it'll beat its other 3 teams in that 5-game stretch. If it loses to Florida, it beats Oregon State, beats Missouri, loses to Clemson, because I think Clemson is very similar to what Florida does. So I think they just struggle with that. It's more of a matchup issue than anything else with what they have down low. And then I think Pitt's winning the backyard brawl. There's too much motivation. This program's got too much momentum. And Jeff, let's be real. That's one of the last boxes that Jeff really needs to check until we start focusing simply, strictly on March accolades. So that's a big one. So I think 3-2 is the safe play. 4-1, I'm really tempted to say it, but I've been very conservative with how I view this basketball team all year. I'm just trying to wait to see what it can do against big time competition before I completely go with my gut, which tells me this is going to be a really good basketball team. I'm this close, but I still got to see it, and that's fine. Carter, any final thoughts as we wrap things up here?
Just that I'm excited to see Pitt basketball start to, you know, get to go on the road. I'm jealous of you getting to go to the Barclays, and you're going to be covering that. And you got a quick turnaround to cover some Duke versus Pitt football to end the season. Noah's going to be traveling, y'all. So if you are out and about in New York, in, was it Raleigh?
Durham.
Where are they? Is it Raleigh, North Carolina?
It's Durham.
I'm mixing it up. But if you out in one of those places, say what's up to this man, because he's going to be traveling. He's going to be jet setting out here.
Yeah, you know what? Everyone, if you believe in a God, pray to them that there are no delayed flights at JFK Saturday morning, because I will be flying into Durham from New York City. I believe my flight leaves at 8 a.m., so I'll be landing in Durham about 2 hours before kickoff. Shout out to the ACC for waiting to give Pitt its 1 noon kickoff the one time I didn't want it. I wish they consulted me, you know, because it's all about the journalists and nobody else, right, Carter? All seriousness, it's going to be a great week. I'm really excited. I love Thanksgiving. I love Feast Week, college basketball, NFL, college football. I mean, just a whole bunch of great stuff. And also, before we wrap up, got to give a shout out to the Pitt women's soccer team.
Absolutely.
Elite Eight. Wow. What a year for them. What a program that they're building. Last year, first tournament appearance. Now they're 2 wins away from the national championship game.
Crazy.
Just tremendous, tremendous progress. Well, that's all we got for this one. We'll be back next week with another Pitt Mailbag for Chris Carter. I'm Noah Hiles signing off, saying we'll see you soon.
Thank you for checking out this content from Post-Gazette Sports. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For all of the sports coverage the Post-Gazette has to offer, visit post-gazette.com.